Welcome to Thursday here at Prairie Public and Thursday's edition of Main Street. I'm your host, Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in the second half of today's show, we'll review the news. That's our weekly tradition here at Prairie Public. And Matt Olean, our in-house movie expert, reviews the blockbuster movie, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. The first question out of the gate, does Matt like this more than the original? But in the first half of today's show, we'll meet Roxanne Westman of Roxy's Place Photography. As a North Dakota landscape photographer, Roxy believes that true beauty isn't seen from the window of a car, it's discovered by stepping into nature to capture that perfect moment. Her goal? It's to make viewers feel as if they are standing within the image itself. Roxanne Westman, welcome to Main Street.
Well, thank you, Craig. I appreciate the invite, and this is very exciting.
I met you at the Fargo Street Fair and cut through all the people, I think, to see all of the beautiful pictures that you've taken about the region. Landscape photography, it's just beautiful. Take me back, Roxanne, to when you started the desire to become a photographer.
Well, actually, my dad loved the outdoors. He had a camera. And probably for my fifth birthday, he bought me the little Brownie camera. So I've had a camera always, have always been using it out in nature or family pictures or whatever. It wasn't probably till about 2007, 2008 where I thought, you know, maybe I've always loved photography. I think we look inside of ourselves, we all have desires. So I started to pursue it. It's like, well, I've always loved photography. Maybe I can do something with this. So I took a lot of classes, went to workshops, joined a camera club, which Fargo Moorhead does have a camera club. So joined that and just kept developing my photography over time. I've always loved craft shows, you know, attending craft shows, art shows, and just seeing what everybody can do. And I just have always thought that was cool. So I thought, maybe that's something I could do. So I talked to my family about it, and they're like all in. They were my biggest supporters. My daughter actually is the one that came up with the name for my business, Roxy's Place Photography.
My landscape photographers do a lot of different things. They do portraits, they have studios, athletics, many, many different things that one can do.
Right.
You've chosen landscapes as your primary focus.
I think we're all, during life, we're all formed in different ways by many different factors. And I was lucky. I grew up on a farm. Being a farm kid, we were outside all the time. So I've always had a love for nature. And then to tell a story, to me, that's landscape photography, tell the story with your, you know, whatever you're capturing that day. And sometimes it takes work, you know, where am I going to, what angle? And just being able to take a drive in the country and enjoy nature just kind of led me into landscape photography, just showing the beauty. I think God has just given us so much beauty around us and to display that and give Him all the glory.
Roxanne, we moved here from Wyoming. And when we came here, one of the first things that I thought is that there's not as much natural beauty here in North Dakota as there was near our home.
Right,
we were just on the 30 minutes away. I could be in the mountains away from everyone in the Wind River Range with lakes and streams and everything. You're telling me a different story here, that there is some great natural beauty right here where we live.
There is. It's all in all seasons. You know, we're lucky. Of course, Wyoming has winters, but we're lucky we have some beautiful winters here. Beautiful sunrises where the sun will rise and just light the snow orange. And it's formed by farming because I grew up on a farm. So I probably will look at nature different than somebody else does. But the wheat is starting to turn yellow. It's just beautiful. It's golden. And there's nothing more detailed than a head of wheat with all the little kernels in there. And it's just beautiful in the sunset. And we have sunflower fields. And then to capture storms, so we have beautiful thunderstorms that roll throughout North Dakota. And winter storms are just as much fun.
Are you sure?
It's snowing and it's blizzarding and I hit my husband up, let's go. So we do. We're fortunate where we live, just southwest of Kindred a little ways. My dad always called it the sand hills. But there's hills out there, and they were, back in the Depression, they were covered with just all sand. And of course, the Corps of Engineers came in and planted a lot of trees and shelter belts out there. So now they're not as, you can't see as much sand out there, but it's beautiful in the Cheyenne National Grasslands. It's maybe 20 miles away from here. It's just rolling hills, and there's some trees and streams out there. So,
do you remember the first picture you sold?
I do. It actually was a Minnesota picture. It was autumn. Autumn in Minnesota and North Dakota is pretty. The changing of the trees and the colors. And I'd gone to, got up real early and went to Maplewood State Park by Pelican Rapids. It was so foggy. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, nothing's going to work. But I was deep in the woods on a, I love to hike, and some fallen trees. The color was like magic with the low sun and then the fog. It was like you were walking in a magical land. That's actually one of the first ones that I sold, just some trees and a fallen log and the fog, colored fog. It was nice and yellow, red.
I think one of the most important things I've learned from visiting with great photographers like yourself is you got to be willing to get up early or stay up late.
Yeah.
That's when the light's the best. What's different about early, early morning light, just sunrise?
I never head out unless there's clouds. You need clouds. It just adds to the picture because the sun, as it's rising, will bounce off the clouds and just can create some magic. So, and sunrise, it can be just as pretty, but there you kind of know what's going to be in your sunrise. You don't always know what's going to be in your foreground because it's dark, you know. So you set it up like on some rocks, and well, it takes some filters and things to bring the color out. But sunrise and sunsets, it's pretty much all about the clouds.
Do you enjoy taking the picture, or do you enjoy what happens afterwards when you bring it back and do the digital post-processing?
My favorite is taking the picture. Going out to discover where to take the picture. I do a lot of just driving down the roads. I pretty much have the eastern part of North Dakota memorized where the good places will be for like a sunrise or a sunset picture. So to me, the favorite part is taking the picture.
How have you evolved with technology? Because in this field, technology has just really changed. Tell me about your first camera that you used to what you use today.
I started out with a film camera, and I, you know, we didn't have the space for developing. And then I discovered later, I probably never could because I have so many allergies. I'm sure that would have been nasty for me. But the digital, oh my gosh, it's such a learning skill between learning your camera. I mean, they're so really, they are very complicated just because there's so many functions you can use with them. I mean, it's great. And then you have your camera. Now your darkroom is your computer. It's just to make those two work together. And then you also have a printer. So what you get with your camera, you have to tweak with your computer. So when you print it, it looks like what it did when you first took it.
That's interesting that you want to make it look like it did when you first took it, not change it.
Well, I mean, that's my personal preference. There's a lot of photographers that will, you know, do different things and bring out maybe a tree or something, just make it look a lot brighter. But I like to me, that's nature.
You were giving advice to someone who has thought to themselves, you know what? This would be a good hobby for me.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell them?
Oh my gosh, photography, you can do it young. We have 5 grandkids for their birthday. It's a few years ago, I bought each one of them a camera. So you can do it young, you can do it old. I mean, it's something that you can always do.
One of the things I've worried about, Roxanne, is the cell phone now has a good camera in it, but it's not the same as having that.
Right.
35 millimeter with a 200 millimeter zoom
right.
lens and all of the different functions mm-hmm. that you talked about, the being able to control the shutter speed and the aperture
right.
and
right.
everything else about it. I'm worried that photography, like what you do, is going mm-hmm. to become a lost art.
And I think just like life, it evolves and photographers need to evolve too. I love cell phones. I mean, I take my dog out for a walk every morning, and what am I carrying? My cell phone. So sunrise picture with my cell phone, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's great because we've evolved into social media, you know, Snapchat, TikTok, Facebook, all of those. And they're great for sharing quick little pictures out there.
Enjoying my conversation with Roxanne Westman. She owns Roxy's Place Photography here in Eastern North Dakota. We're in front of a wall of incredibly beautiful pictures that we're going to describe for our listeners. Roxanne, take it away. Let's go one by one.
All right. We live in the eastern part of North Dakota, which is right next to Minnesota. So I love doing photography in Minnesota. The North Shore up north of Duluth is absolutely incredible. So what we're looking at here is a picture in Cascade River State Park. And there are leaves and pine needles that have fallen onto the rocks that just give it a beautiful red, yellow glow on the rocks. And then some cedar trees jutting up out of the rocky landscape. And then this beautiful, soft waterfall that comes down on the side of the image with a little bit of the river going through the picture.
Tell me about the waterfall, because it does look soft, exactly like you described it. But that means a little bit of a slower shutter speed.
Absolutely.
Probably. What do you think you might have taken that waterfall with?
I use filters on the front of my lens to slow down the water, give it more of a creamy effect. To me, that's just more technique applied to the image. I mean, anybody can walk up with their cell phone and take a quick little snapshot, but until you apply some technique to it, it just gives it that pop.
I'm certain you were using a tripod here.
Absolutely.
Talk to me about a tripod for people that don't know what that brings to you as a photographer.
As a landscape photographer, I went to a workshop one time and he said, when you're out in the field, make every effort you can to get the best image that you can, because you'll never get that chance again. You might not ever get back to that spot again, or the lighting might not be the same, the shades, the shadows, whatever. So landscape photography definitely requires a tripod. And a lot of times I do not have a mirrorless camera, so I lock my mirror and I use a shutter release cord, because you don't want the camera to shake at all. And then another thing too, probably the most important thing, is what lens you're going to use to capture that image. And it all depends on where you're at. Like that waterfall was quite a ways away, so I had to use a bigger lens to zoom it in.
And that changes depth of field in how long or short something looks like it's from you.
Yeah, because where this is at, you're very high. You can't get down there unless you're a rock climber to the, because it's a cliff with metal bars in front of you to protect us. So I'm, you know, just using the zoom lens to bring it in and give you the feel that you're right there.
Certainly a beautiful picture. Let's go on.
Okay, so another North Shore one. We were unfortunate this year to not get any decent clouds, but I'm up before sunrise because it's like magic. When you're by the lake or by a big body of water, pre-sunrise to me is very good. So again, it's a very slow shutter speed. It gives the water just a creamy look. Plus, you can see the color in the rocks that lead out to the point of that little peninsula there.
Fall picture, looks to me like. Beautiful trees, lots of color with the trees. Some cliffs kind of coming down to the water's edge.
Right, right. And this, because I was pretty close, I use a landscape lens, 21 millimeter.
A fairly wide shot then.
It is, yes. And again, I use filters because...
Is it a lot of hit and miss experimentation with filters that you found? Or now, is there like a guide, so to speak, that you can use to really understand which filter works when? Because you can do a lot of different things with camera filters.
Oh, yeah. You can do a lot of different things. I use graduated filters because I want to bring the brightness of the sky down to the same color like as the lake here. So it's darker on top and then clear on the bottom, because you want to get all the beautiful detail in the rocks. See the rocks, how the detail they are, and then the color in the rocks on the shoreline.
Sam, that's printed on metal.
Right.
Tell me about that process.
So what they do, I do not do it myself. It's very expensive equipment. that it would take and a large place to do it. So it is specialty paper that they've used, and then very high quality metal and very high heat that they use to adhere the paper right to the metal.
Let's move along.
Okay, so now we're back into North Dakota. This is the North Dakota Badlands. This is the Theodore Roosevelt National Park. This is the South Unit. This is one of the highest points in the park called Boy Court. And it was autumn, as you can tell by the foreground. The grasses, I love after Labor Day, the grasses out there turn beautiful colors and get a little bit of the autumn color in the bushes in the foreground. And then filters used again because, so interesting story. This one, I was up there for sunset and it looked, not like it was going to do much. And I just started to put the equipment away and there was just a tiny sliver on the horizon where the sun could pop through. And it just like, wow.
Oranges, purples, beautiful.
It is.
Beautiful sunset.
It is. Sometimes I feel like when I'm out there, God just gives me. He just did that for me. And I'm sure a lot of photographers.
But he does that for all of us. I think if we'll just take a moment to.
Right. We do. Sometimes we need to sit back, take a breath, and it can happen. Okay, now we're in North Dakota. This is just early January. This is in the Cheyenne National Grasslands. I had been out there the day before. Winter here, the sun is pretty far south, so you can kind of estimate where it's going to come up at. So I had checked out this spot the day before. I love the fence line going through it. It's very simple. You know, North Dakota, eastern part of North Dakota, there isn't a lot of hills. So this was some rolling hills. And where it was snowing when I was out there. So I thought, you know what? Morning looked partly cloudy. So I grabbed my snowshoes, grabbed my dog, and we had to hike out half a mile to this spot. She wasn't very happy with me because the snow was so pristine, there were no tracks through it, so I made her stay by my side so I could get the shot while the sun was rising, and it was just another gift.
You know, you mentioned that it is simple. It is simple, but if you just think about it, it's beautiful. It is, in many ways, nature's complexity boiled down to in a real simple place.
It is.
Let's go on.
All right, so now we are close to Kindred, North Dakota. There's the North Country Trail. It goes through many states, and North Dakota has many lakes, and this was called the Berg Section, southwest of Kindred. I mean, it's probably not even 20 miles away from where we live right here. Beautiful hiking trail there. I've done the hiking trail several times. This is an overlook. It's actually through, so if you're there in the springtime, it's actually through, it's private land. And people run cattle in there. So it's usually young steers that are in there, very curious. So you always got to watch them as you go through. It's got three walkovers of the fence line. But hiking along, you're going up, 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 up. And then you get to this overlook. And it's always so pretty. And this is one, not everything is planned when you're a photographer. Some things just kind of happen. Well, this one I actually had planned. Because I knew it was going to be partly cloudy. This overlook here was actually flooding. That's the Cheyenne River. Usually you can't hardly see the Cheyenne River, but it was flooding this year, so it was quite large.
Looks kind of natural though, doesn't it?
It is. Yeah, you wouldn't know. And it's springtime, so the trees are just starting to turn a little yellow-green. The grass is bright yellow. This is actually, I do a lot of panoramas because sometimes you got a subject over on your left, and then sometimes you like what's over on the right. So a lot of times it's three vertical shots, boom, boom, boom. And then I could capture the cool hills over here.
So have you stitched it together then? It's a fascinating process. Beautiful sunflowers now.
All right. So sunflowers are always determined by farming. This is a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago. It was a really wet spring. Farmers couldn't get in the fields to do like corn or anything. So we had between Horace and here, there were 7 sunflower fields. So, and this one, I mean, it's pretty flat here. You can't find much for hills. But I managed to find a little ditch that ran through here with a little bit of a rise, and just pretty much, and a storm was coming in. So found that actually right over by the shooting park and walked right into the sunflower field and just waited to see what would.
What's the most difficult picture that you had to really work hard to get, but boy, was it worth it in the end?
That is a very good question. Well, I took a trip to Theodore Roosevelt National Park Mother's Day weekend just this last year. The day I left, it was smoky. Wind had smoke all spring, and it was smoky. So I headed out there anyway, and there's a one spot there called Wind Canyon. It's cool. So if you haven't made it out there yet, I recommend get out there. You'll like it. But this Wind Canyon, there's the Little Missouri that kind of arches around, and then you got some cliffs. And I love to get a sunset picture there. And it was smoky. And then the first day it was kind of stormy. So got some cool storm clouds, but no sun. The last night there, I waited and waited because there was just a little sliver on the horizon and the sun did pop out. So
got your shot.
Yeah. It's a lot of patience, a lot of legwork, a lot of times.
Roxanne, where can people learn more about what you do?
All right. I have a website, roxysplacephotography.com. And then Facebook, my page is Roxy's Place Photography Studio.
Beautiful work.
Thank you.
I hope people can run into you. Do you have some shows that are coming?
I'll be at Fort Ransom in a couple of weeks. And then I belong to the North Dakota. The Department of Agriculture through North Dakota has the Pride of Dakota. So I do some of the shows there. There's one in Fargo and then one in Bismarck that I'll do in November and December.
We wish you the best. Roxanne Westman of Roxy's Place Photography. It's been a real pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Craig.
Coming up after the break, we'll review the news with Prairie Public's Danielle Webster, Dave Thompson, the legend, our director of news here at Prairie Public. He's out on vacation. And Matt Olean will review the much looked forward to Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. It's now become a late summer blockbuster, and the question for Matt, does he like it more than the original? We'll find out. Stay with us right here on Main Street.
Tour the studios of some of Fargo-Moorhead's most popular artists during the FM Visual Artists Studio Crawl. This free event is October 5th and 6th, noon to 6 p.m. See new and returning artists demonstrating their work. New destinations this year include the Indigenous Art Collaboration at the Plains Art Museum. And the Rourke Art Gallery is offering tours of their public access print studio and hosting several area artists in their courtyard outside. Find the studio crawl map at prairiepublic.org/community.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
As we do each and every week here on Main Street, it's time for our news review. And normally we're joined by the legend, that's Prairie Public's news director, Dave Thompson. But he's enjoying a well-deserved vacation. Filling in today is Prairie Public's news reporter, Danielle Webster. Danielle, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you, Craig. It's good to be here.
Let's get right into the news of the week. Danielle, lawmakers now warn not to ignore passion, as they say, for property tax relief. This is a question that's going to be on the November ballot.
Yes, that is correct. So one of the measures on the ballot this coming November is it's basically to eliminate property tax. And, you know, something that the legislature has done, you know, over the last few sessions is they are always talking about lowering taxes and doing this and that. And they always seem to be lowering income tax, which is nice. Probably both got recent statements about our property taxes. People are noticing, you know, it keeps going up, it keeps going up. The discussion around eliminating property taxes has been going on like for a while. It's not been something that people have, you know, by and large supported in the state. But I think, you know, with the increases, you know, people are becoming, you know, a little bit, you know, more concerned about it. Now, the funding, the way the funding works in North Dakota is like we have these things that have to be paid for. And they are paid for through property taxes. So if property tax is eliminated, they're going to have to find, I mean, they have to come up with that money, right? And so, you know, some of these lawmakers are saying like, you know, can't vote for this. I think it's $3.15 billion they're going to have to come up with. Vicki Steiner at that event, I mean, she said, listen, you know, if this passes, I don't think the sky is falling. We'll figure it out. But she is also saying like, listen, we can't continue to kick the can down the road about this. Like, we're going to have to do something about this eventually. Otherwise, the choice is going to be made for us. Then we're going to have to clean up the mess on the back end.
Danielle, there's now formal opposition to a recreational marijuana measure on the ballot. What can you tell us about that?
Well, so what I can say is, well, first of all, I'm not surprised that we have this opposition. You know, every time we have, you know, the discussion of marijuana, whether it was medical or recreational, you know, there's always people that have concerns. You know, for right now, we have folks both in law enforcement and in the medical community, you know, voicing kind of like, you know, hey, wait a minute, like, this is what's going to happen. You know, with increased use of substances like marijuana, there are going to be, you know, health concerns that, you know, public health concerns that we have, people maybe, you know, using too much of it, maybe it getting into the hands of younger people, all those types of things. One of the things that Steve Bakken, he's the chair of New Economic Frontier, that's the group behind Measure 5. He's been talking about, like, you know, we want to help law enforcement, you know, free up time to, you know, be able to address other things and not always constantly having to, you know, deal with these low-level marijuana issues. And I think it was the Mandan police chief who said, like, you know, actually, this is going to make things worse. More people are going to be using it. We're going to be doing more traffic stops. There's going to be more traffic accidents. And, you know, I think one of the things that Steve Bakken, like, when I've talked to him about this measure is, you know, his main issue and the main issue with, you know, New Economic Frontier, like, when they're talking about passing this measure, is they're like, listen, legalization is happening everywhere. Every election cycle, it seems like somebody else is passing some form of it. It's coming. So we need to get in front of this. And this measure is a bit more conservative than recreational marijuana measures that North Dakotans have had in front of them in the past. You could, I mean, the possession amounts are a lot lower. You can't grow as much, you know, of your own plants, you know, per household, things like that. But yeah, you know, there are always going to be concerns, you know, when you're talking about legalizing a new substance, there's just going to be public health, there's going to be public safety types of issues at hand.
Speaking of crime, Fargo police are investigating nearly 100 overnight car break-ins that happened earlier this week. Are any closer to identifying who was doing it?
I have not seen or heard anything about that quite yet. From what I understand, you know, Chief Zabolski and then the investigations captain Bill Alfeld, they're saying, you know, this was it, we're looking for these folks that we have on surveillance camera, a couple of them. But yeah, 100 break-ins, that is not, I mean, people... There's always break-ins, you know, of some kind, but this is
quite a lot.
Yes.
Do we know if crime is increasing in Fargo, Danielle?
It kind of depends on how you look at it. When we've talked about it with Chief Zabolski, you know, in recent times, like he says, like, you know, like violent crime, there's a sense that like there's violent crime, but he's like, statistically, no, it's there's these violent crimes aren't happening as often. But the petty crimes, the property crimes, the types of things that we're talking about right here, they are kind of increasing. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, this is a population center right here in North Dakota. There's 250,000 people in this metro area. And the more people you have, the more the likelihood is that we're going to see crimes like this. He has been speaking with the city of Fargo. You know, he's saying, like, listen, we're fully staffed. I have all my positions filled, but we still can't quite get our arms around these types of issues. So he is, you know, hoping that, you know, that can be addressed that way.
Danielle, we'll wrap up our conversation today with kind of a sad reminder that September is Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. I've already talked about this on Main Street. We will have more shows about that issue. I feel it's important.
I know in Fargo, like where you and I work downtown, I have personally noticed they have the 988 placards up. And I do think that they're working. People are using the lifeline.
Absolutely. If you or anyone you care about, it could be a family member, it could be a great friend, feel the pressures of suicide entering into someone's life, make that call 988. There's a trained person on the other end to help you along and to make a difference. Danielle Webster, Prairie Public's news reporter, thank you so much for joining us on Main Street.
Thank you.
I'll tell you a story. Support for Prairie Public is provided by Starian Bank, determined to provide smart banking solutions with innovative checking accounts and personal banking tools that match your lifestyle. Starian, taking you farther. Learn more at StarianBank.com.
It's Thursday. We know that because we just heard the fanfare, and it's time for our weekly review of the movies with our in-house movie expert, Matt Olien. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Hi, Craig.
Let's take a listen to this clip from Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
It's intense.
I believe Grandpa is dead.
Death is hard.
Yeah, sometimes I think life is harder.
When I was a teenager, a trickster demon terrorized our entire family and tried to force me to marry him. I believed he was gone forever until you found this in the attic.
Ew. Who's Beetlejuice?
Don't ever say that name.
Beetlejuice.
No, Astrid! I am serious! If you say his name three times, he will appear.
Beetlejuice.
The juice is loose. I'm gonna make you so happy.
All right, Matt, you've seen the movie. It's showtime! Right?
The juice is loose. He did say that.
I love the first movie. Can't wait to see the second Beetlejuice.
Well, it's, you know, it's tricky to make a sequel 36 years later.
With the same cast members.
With some of the same cast members. So Catherine O'Hara is back. Winona Ryder is back as Lydia Deetz, Catherine O'Hara's stepdaughter. And also Michael Keaton is back as Beetlejuice. So those are the three returning cast members. Gina Davis, Alec Baldwin are not in this movie, but Jenna Ortega is introduced as Lydia's daughter. And Jenna Ortega, of course, is kind of the new it actress of the moment. And she essentially stumbles onto the portal that's going to unleash Beetlejuice in the movie. We don't want to get into too many plot points here, but basically the Deetz family returns to Winter River, to the haunted house, after a family tragedy, to kind of gather there. And Lydia is now, the Winona Ryder character, is now hosting like a ghost supernatural show. She's, you know, this is what she does, right? In the first movie, she, you know, encountered Beetlejuice. She understands that the supernatural exists. So that is her, that's her job now. Along the way, we have a lot of new characters, including several new villains. Monica Bellucci plays Beetlejuice's wife in a former, you know, years ago, 400 years ago in Italy. And we have a lot of nods to Italian horror movies in this film by Tim Burton. Michael Keaton starts speaking in Italian. It feels like we're in an Italian horror movie. I like those parts as well. There are some parts I did not care for as much this time. And I think hard to manage and juggle this many characters, especially three villains. There's really three villains in this movie, and I don't even count Beetlejuice as a villain because he's so engaging and so funny. But basically that's the plot. The Deetzes come back because there's a family tragedy, and eventually Beetlejuice gets loose. There's some amazing scenes in the third act, especially this dance sequence around Richard Harris's MacArthur Park song, which was a big hit in the late 60s. We have a return to Harry Belafonte's Deo song in the movie as well. So I think Burton managed to make his best film in a long time, which is not saying much because he's had some stinkers, but I think he managed to successfully sell nostalgia, but also kind of update things with new characters. I don't think it's as good as the original. There's some weak parts in there. The third act is better than the first act, I think. I thought Winona Ryder overacted a little bit. Some of her facial expressions when she's reacting to things seem forced to me. I'm sure that's what they wanted, but they seemed a little forced, especially compared to the more natural performances of Catherine O'Hara, Jenna Ortega, and of course, Michael Keaton, who's amazing at age 73 as Beetlejuice. $110 million. I could not believe that opening weekend, Craig. For a sequel that's 36 years after, that's an incredible box office haul. The film isn't terribly funny. I mean, it's amusing, and there's great production design, great costumes, but $110 million is crazy. So they marketed it very well, and I think bringing back three of the cast members was a huge thing. If they would have brought back none of the cast members, this wouldn't have happened.
I think I agree with that. The comedic timing, though, shoot, Matt, I thought you would tell me it was a little more funny than I think that you left the movie thinking about. And I'm sad about that because I thought the first Beetlejuice was just full of great comedy at the right time.
It is funny, but it's not laugh out loud funny. I think the stars of the movie are the returning cast members and the incredible production design, costume design. Michael Keaton's funny. He's always funny in this role. But it wasn't like laugh out loud funny, I wouldn't say, but I don't know that it needs to be successful. And let me just say, too, with Tim Burton, I am completely hot and cold on his career. I mean, some people just worship at the altar of Tim Burton, but let's face it, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is a bad movie with a bad performance by Johnny Depp. His Planet of the Apes movie is bad. Mars Attacks, not good. Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows. He's made some really bad movies, so this is kind of a return to form for him, a little bit of the wink, wink, nod, nod, old time funny and having a good time, Tim Burton. And for whatever reason, the movie going public was ready to see this movie.
With Winona Ryder now having a family, a daughter, has it left itself open to Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice?
Yes, Jenna Ortega is now such a big star that I think this does leave room for a sequel. Tim Burton's not a young man anymore. He's 66 years old. But I would say when you open at $110 million, you've probably got sequel on your mind. So I think that that is coming. It possibly could be coming. One of the villains in this movie, and I don't want to give away too much, really has something to do with the portal, kind of the entry into the portal by the Jenna Ortega character. And it's a little bit of a surprising twist. And I say I did like the surprise twist that sort of unlocks that portal with this unlikely villain that we see.
All right, Matt. So we give it a 1¾ thumbs up? Is that what we do for Beetlejuice?
I think people will enjoy it if this is what they want to go see. I don't think it's a great film by any means. I think the first film is still better. I agree with you, Craig. The first film has a nostalgia to it. Yeah, I liked it enough, I would say. Some of the reviews, most of the reviews are pretty good. Some of the reviews are unnecessarily negative, I think. But I think Burton, this is what he does best.
All right, before we wrap things up today, Matt, James Earl Jones passed away.
Yeah, what a loss, what a career. You know, I want to make note when his passing happened, almost all of the headlines were, you know, Darth Vader, Lion King, and we understand that, the voice of Mufasa, the voice of Darth Vader.
So much more.
But his Oscar nomination came for The Great White Hope in 1970 as boxer Jack Johnson, and that he had won a Tony on Broadway playing the first ever, you know, black heavyweight champion. And he probably would have won the Oscar had it not been for George C. Scott and Patton that year, that no one was going to beat him. He got an honorary Oscar later. Love him in Field of Dreams, one of two great supporting performances in that movie, along with Burt Lancaster's kind of farewell performance. So majestic voice, commanding presence, almost universally loved by everyone. So that's a big one.
All right, Matt, let's go to Oscar trivia. It's somewhat James Earl Jones related. You talked about the movie The Great White Hope in 1970. Who else was nominated in that year?
Well, George C. Scott won it for Patton, famously refused the Oscar, one of two men to ever refuse an Oscar. The other was Marlon Brando for The Godfather. They are still listed as the winners, however, in Oscar history. Then James Earl Jones for The Great White Hope in 1970. The other nominees, Ryan O'Neill for Love Story, Melvin Douglas, I Never Sang for My Father, and Jack Nicholson, Five Easy Pieces.
Matt, you have some more movies on the docket. What are you looking forward to?
You know, I think I'm going to go check out Reagan, which is kind of a minor box office hit. I think conservative audiences are going to that, so there's not a lot to see this weekend. So I might just check out Reagan. We've got Megalopolis coming up. The Joker movie, right, with Joaquin Phoenix returning, this time with Lady Gaga. That should be interesting as well. Todd Phillips directs that. Those are some of the ones we have coming up to review.
Matt, I'm looking forward to a movie that you want to review October 17th, I believe, Saturday night. And
yes,
it's going to be about Saturday Night Live, all of the chaos perhaps that happened before the first episode. And I say that because I heard a very interesting interview with Will Ferrell. He just took a cross-country tour with one of the show's writers. There's a lot to that. I think you can see that. It's now been made into a film. But he talked about how he was an outcast when he came on to Saturday Night Live with those original cast members. I think this will be fascinating.
It looks interesting from the trailer. Could have some Oscar legs. We'll see. Yeah.
We've been to the movies with Matt Olien.
More Main Street is ahead. Stay with us.
Most commercial kitchens cook with natural gas, a fossil fuel that contributes to climate change. So some chefs are going electric.
That's extremely fast. It's faster than gas.
For NPR's Climate Week, we hear from chefs on the pros and cons of electric induction.
That steak is cooked perfectly.
Tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Water is becoming a battleground in the Midwest as climate change and increasing demand strain vital water sources like the Missouri River. With projects like North Dakota's Red River Valley Water Supply in the works, tensions are rising among states, tribes, and local stakeholders, all fighting to secure their share of this precious resource. Harvest Public Media's Kate Grumke reports.
On the ground in St. Louis, you're not always aware of how reliant we are on the huge rivers around us. But from the air, it's obvious. On a flight with the environmental organization Lighthawk, a volunteer pilot traced the final few miles of the Missouri River as it dumps into the Mississippi just north of St. Louis.
Altitude.
Here, these rivers are lined with farms, power plants, and cities full of people drinking the water. Missouri's politicians know this water is precious, and they're preparing to block attempts to take water from the state. Upstream, there are already projects putting metaphorical straws into the waters of the Missouri River. One is the Red River Valley Water Supply Project in North Dakota. Here's how a promotional video lays out its goals.
Reliable water supplies for drinking water and industrial uses in central North Dakota and the Red River Valley can be scarce, especially under drought conditions. Yet, the Missouri River presents an abundant resource.
Construction is already underway on this pipeline that will move Missouri River water. It's expected to be completed in 2032. This water pipeline is contentious. A couple years ago, the state of Missouri sued unsuccessfully to try to block a project that connects to it. Some North Dakotans think lawsuits from downriver states are only going to become more common. Duane DeCray is the general manager of the Garrison Diversion Conservancy District, which is co-leading the Red River Project.
I think that water use is going to kind of move from west to east, and the Missouri River is probably the next on the docket for everybody trying to get a piece of it.
DeCray says there's a saying where he lives.
Whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting.
That's a phrase Doug Kluck is familiar with. He's the Central Region's Climate Services Director for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Kluck says climate change could bring more water scarcity to these parts.
If you want to layer on climate change onto, if you will, man-made challenges, then you're talking about longer periods of drought with more heavy rainfall events kind of stuck in between that don't help as much when it comes to needs.
And Kluck points out some research has shown that the line of aridity, where the drier Great Plains start, might already be moving east. Water fights could move east with that line. While the western U.S. is known for big water struggles, especially in the Colorado River Basin, there are smaller fights already happening in the Midwest. Burke Griggs is a professor of law at Washburn University in Topeka, Kansas. In 2015, he represented Kansas before the Supreme Court in a water case against Nebraska.
The interstate water dispute does have a long and pretty distinguished history.
Griggs says there are fights over rivers and groundwater between neighbors. There are even international water agreements, like on the Great Lakes. And there are tribal nations throughout the Midwest who also have a claim. Doug Krogost is the Water Resources Director for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. He's also chairman of the board of the Great Plains Tribal Water Alliance, which includes tribes along the Missouri River.
It's going to be a water war, you know, and we're seeing it right now. A water war within states, and the tribes are pitted in the middle of all of it. And the funny thing about it is the tribes have a bigger water right than the states do.
Kyrgios points out treaties the tribes struck with the U.S. more than a century ago promised them water. Close observers say climate change is going to bring all of these stakeholders into the courtroom more often. Or, at the very least, it will force a lot more collaboration. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Kate Grumke.
This is Dakota Datebook for September 12th. An epidemic of bank robberies and safe cracking swept through North Dakota in the early 20th century. In 1907, the Bismarck Daily Tribune reported that yeggmen are still committing depredations over the state. Yeggmen was a colloquial term for safecrackers. In May, burglars used nitroglycerin to blow open a safe at a laundry in Minot, making off with $300. In June, an ice cream factory in Minot was similarly targeted, with burglars using the same method to steal $200. The Daily Tribune noted that the robbers were of the boldest and most desperate kind. On this date, in 1907, the Hope Pioneer reported on a break-in in Hannaford, calling it undoubtedly one of the most daring robberies that has been pulled off in North Dakota this season. Two stores in Hannaford were broken into, with burglars using nitroglycerin to blow open the safes. They stole money, watches, and jewelry from the display cases, as well as shotguns and ammunition. The robbers also emptied the cash registers. The following morning, several people reported hearing an explosion in the night, but no one reported it. The burglars vanished without a trace, though a missing railroad handcar was thought to be the means of their getaway. The robberies continued throughout the year. In October, a bank in Church's Ferry was robbed of $6,000. A posse from Devil's Lake was dispatched, but failed to find the culprits. They did discover an abandoned shed containing shotguns and ammunition, with two of the guns identified as having been stolen from a store in Michigan, North Dakota. A Pinkerton detective told authorities about a gang of known criminals who had established their headquarters in Fargo. Although he had no evidence linking them to the recent crimes, he was aware of their activities in other states and warned that they were likely the culprits. In response, banks and post offices across the state began taking precautions. Eventually, the burglaries subsided, and there is no record of the perpetrators ever being caught. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming along with our members and other sources here on Prairie Public.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode of Main Street. We are so glad you could tune in. If you missed anything or want to catch up on past conversations, you can always find this episode and others at our website, prairiepublic.org, or on your favorite podcast platforms, perfect for when you want to stay connected on the go. Coming up tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, tune in for The Middle with Jeremy Hobson. He'll be discussing, do media and social media companies have too much sway in this election? Then, don't miss Science Friday with Ira Plato at 7 p.m. Central tomorrow. Looking ahead to Monday on Main Street, we'll sit down with voting rights advocate Richard Bell. With over 20 years of experience fighting voter suppression, he shares insights from his book, Voting, The Ultimate Act of Resistance. From all of us here at Prairie Public, have a wonderful North Dakota weekend. We'll see you back here again Monday on Main Street.